Hello and welcome. I'm William Morgan and this is 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and thesyncbook.com, a weekly conversation with the interesting artists and thinkers of our day. You can find us online at 42minutes.com and you can reach us by sending a message to mail at 42minutes.com. You can also follow our tweets at Sync42 and at SyncBook. Find online, don't fall behind. Everything is one, yet it's one of a kind. I don't give a goddamn what you think of me. I just give a goddamn if you're thinking me. Try to find shit, shamans try to hide and blind you. Taking rockets to the stars while I'm popping lock. I'm so hypnotic, drink it on down like a tonic. Type 1 represent ill hydroponic. I'm gonna break it down for 42 with the hot shit. Kicking it with the renegade by the name of Sonic.
So I just watched Radio Free Album today.
I have not seen it yet. How did you like it?
It's really good. Yeah. It's been a while since I've read Vallis, but a lot of it came back to me whilst watching that.
Mm. Yeah, Radio Free, I don't know if you've... that book is almost exactly like Vallis. Like, the story goes that he wrote that one first, but it was found after he died. It was like he had given it to a friend or something along those lines. Uh-huh. And then they published it posthumously or something along those lines, like after death. So it's almost... I mean, it is definitely a mirror image of Vallis, except in that, to me, it's a lot more pessimistic than Vallis. And pessimistic in the way of, like, conspiracy theory. It was definitely a more conspiratorial, like, view of what had happened to him.
Yeah. I found it quite... I don't know whether it was done deliberately in the film, but I found it quite... poignant for today's society.
Oh, the coming police state.
Well, it's not the coming, it's already here, mate.
It's true.
And now we've got the reason why I watched it was because I listened to the 42 minutes you did with Tessa this week.
Yes, sir.
I've been meaning to watch it for a while, but yeah, it just gave me the impetus to actually watch it. But what came up is like a bit of a sync going on in the last week of Empire, because you were talking a lot about Empire there.
Oh, yeah.
And I was listening to, after John had put on that he'd been censored by Red Ice, I saw that there was a Neil Cramer interview just put up there. So I thought I'd give that a listen, because he's always quite interesting to hear. And he was talking about Empire in that as well. I don't know whether you've listened to that yet.
No, I stay away from Red Ice now just because I overdid it this summer and it really had like a harsh effect on me. Like, it just started making me angry and pissed off and I didn't like it. I guess, I don't know, maybe that's what journalism's supposed to do for you, or how do you feel about Red Ice?
I feel that they have changed their agenda slightly, to say the least. and But you could see that coming in with the Radio 314 shows, and then they slowly crept onto Red Ice proper.
Right.
Because Lana was getting some crazy ass people on, and just reading the synopsis of those shows is like, well, yeah, I don't really want to be listening to things like that. And then, that and even the news feed seemed to get more and more persecutionist, if that's a word. They seem to be getting more and more into a victim mentality.
Well, there was a show that they did on modern art, I think, and they put up a cover of like the artist, there's like certain art installations that had nude pictures or whatever. And this was way before any of, Red Ice's Summer of Hate or whatnot, but it was clear to me after they put that up that people made him take it down, like they started complaining about it or something. And I think that Red Ice has gotten so big that there's no way, and you're dealing with such kind of crazy topics, there's no way to make everybody happy. But what's pissed me off is that Red Ice has gone to this complete other side where they're just trying to piss people off. I mean, they're doing things intentionally. Like I remember Red Ice was the first to get, capped, for lack of a better term, on iTunes. The thing is, who doesn't have problems with iTunes? Do you know what I mean? Like,
But they're still on there. They're still on there.
right? But see, they made it. Perhaps they got shut down in like a different country, or probably it was okay in Europe or whatever. Well, anyways, when it happened, Red Ice just had this whole campaign where it was like, look, they shut us down. We must be telling the truth. We must be on to something. And that's when Radio 314 took on this. Like, the very next show that they did was like more Jew revisionist than they could possibly ever do. And then they were like rubbing it in your face. It was almost like, well, why aren't we like capped on iTunes? Or why aren't we taken down off? Like, they took it to the next level just to piss people off. And I think that they're stuck in like that pattern now, where it's like if anybody has a problem with anything that they say, the next one that comes out is going to be 10 times worse. Like, it's going to be even more. But the dangerous thing is, like, everybody, like, I'm pretty sure they edited Pearl out. I think Pearl had, and this is another individual who's in the sync book, Peg Carter. I think she's in the first one. Is that correct?
She's quite vocal in
Oh,
all.
yeah.
She puts loads of posts up on the 9/11 Facebook page.
No, she's like a can she entertains no plane theory and stuff like that, and can direct you to ample evidence on that. And Peg's got an opinion. Peg's got a strong opinion, and she'll have it with you. Or they think she had tagged Heinrich to a post of hers about it. Was just probably a misunderstanding in the way they word it, but she said something to the fact, like, all of these men that I've had a high opinion on for a while now have a problem, or say derogatory things towards women or whatnot. And Heinrich was like, please source where I ever said anything like that. And basically Peg was like, I didn't say you did. I just referenced one of the shows that you put up. And she somehow there was a conversation that got on the Red Ice page, and she tagged me and wrote on it, and I hit the tag to go see what she had written on like Red Ice's page, and it was gone. And then all of these other people are like, hey, they just blocked me. Hey, they just erased my comment. Now, SyncBook never really, I mean, we had issues with Red Ice, but we really didn't get worried or anything like that. Nobody in like the Synchronize podcast who put that on was, that wasn't even in plans until all of the Jew bashing and stuff started becoming overabundant on Red Ice's like message boards and stuff. Like, on their comments page or on their Facebook and whatnot, there was become there had it was like openly racist. It had nothing to do with political correctness. It had to just be like using N-word for the sake of using N-word and stuff. And it's still like that. They don't erase that. They erase anybody who has a difference of opinion with them.
So their idea of censorship is slightly screwed.
Right. It's the empire. It's the whole complex of the empire. I mean, Red Eyes can be pissed off about, you know, somebody having a problem with what they're doing all they want to, but then they become a caricature of what they were fighting to begin with. And then this happens like over and over in movies and stuff. It's always, I mean, watching Daredevil recently, it becomes really clear, like, where's the line between vigilante and criminal? Like, who watches the Watchmen? It's a topic that happens over and over. Those who fight the Empire become the friggin' the Empire.
Yeah. They become which they aspire to defeat. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, but I'd say that that is maybe a human condition. In the, you know, you've got your 60s counterculture, all the hippies then cut off the hair and became politicians and end up running the countries now.
Right. Yeah.
And were they selected, spotted at early ages, sent to various Bilderberg meetings and various things like that? Yeah, you know, because there's obviously evidence that these power, all the people that are presented to us as the power elite have been to these gatherings, but whether or not they are just the minions, I'd pretty much say they are the minions. They're the public relations of the smaller cabal at the back there, which have no they've got no allegiance to anybody, any body or country than themselves. So they don't. They don't at that level. I would imagine that they, give any credence to, smaller bodies. You know, they don't care who they piss off, and the more people that they do piss off, the better it is for their control mechanism, because they can, you know, divide and conquer is the best form of defense in a way, isn't it?
Yeah, it's true. And I've been noticing a lot more lately. Like, I've been thinking about this whole idea of divide and conquer. Like, that ambiguous term, anybody in control, how's that, likes confusion. Because confusion gives them the opportunity to take control.
Yes, the classic three-card Monty, isn't it? You know, look what this hand's doing, not what that hand's doing.
And I think that all of these reports that you see of individuals like the police starting protest or riots or whatever, that's all part of that. And yeah. And then I think that what has been termed crisis actors, that's a part of that. Like, a lot of people have asked that question about the whole idea, like, the crisis actor theme seems completely crazy, because if they were that sick, then they would have killed the people anyway. Do you know what I mean? Like, why use an actor? So the only reason to use an actor is to actually, like, make it seem like a conspiracy. You know what I mean? Like, make it seem fake. I think a lot of things nowadays are done to look fake, just so there'll be a division on who will say what it is.
Well, and do you not think that maybe not necessarily started, but the one most notable was 9/11, because the story that they came out with was so full of holes that it warranted further investigation, and so they had that that pattern of events that that they could take. You know, it was like a blueprint for future falsities to be enacted, and the it seems that the more years have gone on since then, the figures that have been placed on our TV screens.
Well, I think they learned a lot about it from JFK. I mean, you can learn a lot about how the media was manipulated, or how the media manipulated what the public thought, because that's the most important, is what the public thinks. And
Well,
I
it was a lot easier to do then, wasn't it? Because there was such a small, narrow band of media. Whereas now, because of the internet, more people are connected instantaneously, and so that they can share ideas like that. So
Well,
you.
I think that's a lot. I think that's why they did September 11th when they did, because that's what that report came out the year before, right? That basically was begging for a new Pearl Harbor. Was that because in the growing change that the world was in with the coming internet and everything, because that was all pre that. That was pre, like, a lot of people sourced the 9/11 supposed computer, generated airplanes would not have been possible in 2001. It wasn't until afterwards that, you started seeing highly special, highly generated special effects, CGI.
That's only
They
what's
had to
in.
gain control. They had to use it before it was, that was only what the regular, public was using. But they probably, do you get what I'm saying? Like, they had the ability to do it back then, but they knew it was about to be where that was going to become easier. So it was like it was a strategic point where you had to make a big, a media like lie at that point, because that was right before the internet. I mean, right afterwards was everything that happened. It's weird. It's weird. That's why they needed to do it, because that took care of the information age. Like, that helped them gain the complete, police control over the information age. Because after that, it would have, you would have had people the next day fucking, like, look at the Super Bowl. I remember the Madonna Super Bowl that happened a while back. Like, I remember I was watching the Super Bowl, the Madonna came in, I was like, I can't even watch this. Like, I left the room because it was like, I knew what was going to be on the internet the next day. Do you know what I mean? Like, I knew there was post up the next day. That thing was so big that there were even like pub there were regional newspapers that had write-ups about. I was like, this is when it stepped over and no longer some kook like internet thing. Like, there was newspapers having spreads about Madonna's Super Bowl. Now, that was
So
the internet.
newspapers
Right,
sinky.
right. I mean, it was starting to become. Think about the 9/11 thing. On if it happened yesterday, there would have been just d the same with the bombers, the Boston bombers. Like, the very next day is when you got all the weird stuff coming out with them. Maybe they're just putting weird stuff out. I think about Obama's like birth certificate. Do you remember that whole thing?
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned weird stuff and Obama, because that actually goes back into the Empire thing. Because Freeman, before even Obama got elected, or he was even on the paper, he was talking about Obama being the clone of Akhenaten, and he also has a book called Weird Stuff. And so he was saying that the birther he was like predicting that people would have a problem with his birth certificate before that was even on the agenda, not on the agenda, but on the radar. And he was also was just listening to him the other day. He was saying, the talk about possibly Michelle being a man or used to being a man. is another sort of meme put out there to either put people off the scent of
misdirection,
the possibility of them being cloned.
Yeah.
But
see, when the thing is when his birth certificate came out, I remember watching a whole bunch of videos on how fake it was, because there was just random videos. People came up with it the next day and they were like, look, if you click the file, you download the file, when you click to open it, it opens with Photoshop. That's like it's a Photoshop file. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know that they were messing around in here, and they showed everything that they changed. And they're like, this isn't even done very well. It's like, you can easily see through it. But everything that was see-through wasn't of any consequence. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was his mom's occupation or something along those lines. So it was like, okay, we have like a confirmation of conspiracy theory, but it's watered down. Do you get what I mean? It was easy to see through. And that's what is up with all those crisis actors. The things that, not even some of the crisis actor things get so crazy where you're like, that's obviously not the same person. But some of it, when they show the straight pictures, you've seen those things, right? Where there's multiple school shootings and they'll show the same pictures of different children just in different countries and stuff. And it's like, how does that happen? And what's the purpose of that?
Like, was it one of the Sandy Hook kids, a picture of him ended up in the Pakistan school shooting? Was that?
Yeah, that one in particular, but I've seen other ones that are like obviously the same person too, where that's impossible. Like, it's the same exact picture on that particular one. That's like they're doing it on purpose. Do you know what I mean? You can't really argue with that. But it's like,
they've been trying now.
Right. Or they are trying. It's just misdirection. Like, it's not even of consequence. It's just to distract, like, the conspiracy. Or just to divide opinion to where it's like individuals are like, well, I believe in 9/11 conspiracy, but I don't believe in no plane. So then you just put out conspiracy theories that are kooky as shit. So everybody's like totally got a bad taste in their mouth about all conspiracy theories, or even the word conspiracy theories.
Yeah. Well, they're proposing a new law over here against extremists, which I'm sure they'll try and tag in people who don't believe government propaganda. and even in France, after Charlie Hebdo, they brought in a bill, even though it was like freedom of speech that they were spouting to that these cartoonists had this freedom of speech that basically killed them. And then the other hand is going, right, well, we're going to curb people believing in or spouting conspiracy theories, which goes against freedom of speech. Yeah, but maybe that's done to put people into it sort of splits people's altars, doesn't it? Because they're being told one thing and being told the complete opposite thing at the same time. And
cognitive dissonance or doublethink, as
where
they put us in a severe stage of doublethink just by like giving off bad information or disinformation, so that nobody has a clear picture of exactly what the fuck is going on, and they just keep us in a complete state of confusion. And there's probably multiple facets of that. Like, there's multiple things going on at one time. It's just not one conspiracy. To me, what do you know about the whole Danny Casolaro thing? The octopus? Do you know much about that?
Tell me a bit about that.
Well, I won't go too big. You should look it up. I think I pronounced his name right. Casolaro. Anyways, he was a reporter. He came up with this idea of something called the octopus. And the octopus is a concept of like not one all-powerful like Illuminati, but it's more like there's eight different factions all competing for power, but sometimes they'll use each other to help for a common goal, like tentacles on an octopus. Sometimes they're mostly fighting, pulling against each other, but they're also working as one. So different people will help out. And then that's when you get the whole concept of being in a dark room and a bunch of blind men are like trying to figure out the elephant by just feel and touch. And it's like one thinks it's a snake. Do you know what I mean?
So then no one's getting the full picture.
Right.
And people are more focused on the different parts without looking objectively at the whole. Yeah.
But then there's always aliens.
There's always Valis.
Right.
So do you think that he'd come across the Black Knight satellite in writing that? Obviously some of that was like a personal experience that he'd had, you know, with the pink light and the necklace or... But the concept, because there was news reports from back in the 50s of this bizarre thing in the sky that nobody knew was there. It's supposed to have been there for, I don't know how they know that it's supposed to have been there for 13,000 years, but maybe it told them.
You mean, do I think that it's real or whatever? It's weird because I've been reading up on John Lilly lately and I've had this conversation with quite a few people already, but it's like, I start to realize that like in the 1970s, just about everybody in the counterculture was talking to extraterrestrials. And I'm kind of wondering if they just interpreted it as extraterrestrials because that was the time period that they were in and how their brain you think about like Whitley Strieber, and Whitley Strieber says that his experience was basically translated through him based on who he was, which was a sci-fi horror writer. So everything that happened to him kind of had that feel.
Yeah.
It all has to do with your point of view as well. Like there's,
Do you think that they were all doing a lot of acid?
Yes.
And
all of the above. I don't even need to hear the rest.
And B, that those types of experiences are what people are experiencing now when with the emergence in Western society of people doing ayahuasca. You know, people report having meetings with other beings, particularly Earth-based beings. And on psychedelics, I've had similar experiences of seeing different entities, but I've attributed that to being in my head and it being I can relate to the idea that we are all part of a whole universe, and that we are parts of that whole, experiencing the thing from different points of view. But my experiences on psychedelics were, in my head.
What was your crazy experiences on psychedelics? I want to kind of get a feel of what happened.
Well, we used to have mushroom parties at our house, and at some point in the night, I'd sit there with my eyes closed and have visions of blue beings, doing various stuff in my head. Then I've had experience of doing a rather large amount of psilocybin and going from completely straight-headed within like 2 minutes to full-on hallucinatory visions. And at that point, through that experience, that it was like I was going through different gates, and there was it was quite dark. There was lots of I wouldn't say devils, but I'd say the archetype of a fallen angel was definitely present there. And also with my eyes open, because they were sort of in my head when I closed my eyes. But I've also had the same trip, having a conversation with one of my roommates at the time, and on the wall next to him there was a massive head skull that was sort of looking at me and looking at him, and he was like, "What's this?" You know, sort of talking to me, going, "What's this guy going on about?" I've done stuff at festivals where I've just immersed myself in nature and felt absorbed by it, you know, become the tree that I was sitting on, and then, you know, felt in those sort of experiences, felt the cliched oneness.
The samadhi, the cliche oneness, he says.
And I do discuss spiritual topics quite regularly because of producing Swami's show on the Fridays, Swami Sivananda Giri, which is Swami and Antananda's fellow Swami, because those two have got the same guru.
The Swamis are cool. Swamis are good people.
Yeah. Those two in particular are proper dudes.
I'm pretty sure that I've met Andagiri.
Yeah, he was at the Sync Summit.
Yeah, and every time I saw him, he just had this complete peaceful look on his face, like a little baby who's just starting to smile. It's difficult to explain. Like he was part of the energy for sure. But he was just so into everything. Like, I don't know, he's just a good person. Dougie. Yeah. And then I've listened to your shows before with the other Swami, and I've heard what he's about as well. But you were saying?
He's just started a new show on Revolution Radio, actually, with Jay Parker.
Okay.
Because Jay used to do a show with us on Type 1, but since we changed, we no longer have the ability for people to call in, and he really wanted that audience participation, so they managed to get like a slot on Revolution Radio. They're getting quite into that. It's that they've done a couple of shows, or they've done three shows now. There was one last night. Just a little plug for them. Go listen to that.
Sounds good. So psychedelia is the thing. Wait. Before we get further, I gotta tell you, man, like something keyed off. These blue people, tell me more about these blue people.
They weren't quite, your classical Krishna appearance, but very, very similar. And maybe it was more they were like a Buddhist thing, because I was studying Buddhism quite heavily at the time. So you've got the concept of the Blue Tara, who was like one of Buddha's female emanations. And I'm just trying to picture, just sort of a blue lady with sort of goldy hair.
And what were they doing? Like, and was when you would close your eyes and see them, you were in your room? Were you seeing your room, or?
No, it was like a just a black background, and I think we must have been listening to music, because I think she was dancing, or they were dancing, and they'd sort of morph into different people, but this was with my eyes closed, because at the time I think if I'd opened my eyes, I would have seen some crazy shit, even more so than just in my head.
Rodney Asher's new movie.
Yeah, the nightmare.
Yeah.
How was that, man? How was that?
Oh, it was intense, man, because there's blue people in it too. But that's what I just didn't expect that movie to like cover so much ground. I've actually experienced night or sleep paralysis before, and so I had like a connection to the material, but I really wasn't expecting much. Do you know what I mean? Like I wasn't like setting myself up for disappointment or anything like that. Like I was just going to shake Rodney's hand. I didn't think that it would have any sync for me, but it was powerful. Like my body kept responding. Like I kept feeling the hair on my arm stand up. But probably for just as much of a sync reason as for like a fear factor, because it is a horror movie. So there
So
are.
is it in the same style as Room 237?
Yes, but there's a difference. Both have eight like witnesses for or individuals that they interview. So there's the eight that's in 237 that have different points of view on The Shining, and then there's eight individuals who have experienced a great many interesting episodes with sleep paralysis. And then in the 237 movie, it was mixed together with a whole bunch of stock footage and licensed footage. You get what I mean? And there was only a few scenes where there was actually an actor and a reenacted scene that Rodney would direct. Well, in The Nightmare, there's a whole bunch of the reenactments, a whole bunch. Like instead of having horror movie and stock movie, there and being like 80% and 20% filmed scenes in 237, it's like reversed in The Nightmare. So there's probably only 20% stock footage, and the rest is like edited scenes together. Does that make sense?
So does that make it, does that give it an eerier edge because you haven't seen the footage? Because like in Room 237, you sort of know the clips from The Shining. So the impact has gone.
Right, I get exactly what you're saying. Like you already, yeah, I can see exactly. It's fresher because of that, for sure. Like this movie's fresher, but this movie, like, the 237 is kind of edited like a sync film, where or a sync video, where you have multiple sources dealing with the same material in a way that kind of opens up some kind of epiphany or insight. But The Nightmare is an intentional sync film. It's not a sync vid, it's a sync film. And he intentionally works with certain, and intentionally under the aspect of their archetypical, as far as the experience that individuals are having, like they keep talking about the Hat Man in Nightmares. And so he shows a scene of Freddy Krueger. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, but then there's the intentional syncs also, not just syncing that way, but there's the things where he does, like, he reenacts a scene of a newscaster and the channel is number 42. Spoiler alert! Post. Spoiler. But that's what he did. Like, and in my head, I'm like, you know, this is that other side of filmmakers making movies to intentionally fuck with sync heads. And he said it at the end of it. He's like, you know, when we stayed for a Q&A and I asked him a second. He's like, well, the channel 42, I put in there specifically for you guys. And I kind of shouted out. I was like, thank you, man. Thank you. Because that's it. That's the next level. When people are intentionally putting, you know, these scenes that are uncovered, there, it creates this full feedback loop that nobody knows what's on the other side of that. Do you know what I mean? Nobody knows. When somebody makes an intentional, like maybe all movies are intentionally sync films, but I don't think so. I think people try to put meaning or extra meaning, and any good storyteller will do so because that adds depth to the story, right?
Yeah.
But sync heads look for the meaning behind the meaning, like what's behind the circuit board. They push it that extra length, so they see a lot of things that are unintentional. Or, in fact, couldn't be possibly intentional. That's why I mess with actors like Andras Jones. And I've watched a lot of individuals, like, stuff people would have to go in onto IMDb to learn more about them. Like, this one actress I know, Michaela Jay, who does the voice for the movie Corporation. Like, you look at stuff that she's done and the amount of independent work she's done and local TV work, and you're like, she has syncs or stuff that brings extra layer of meaning, and there's no way that it's intentional. It's different if you're looking at The Shining, where you're always going to be asking yourself how much of it is intended and how much of it isn't, because you're still dealing with this whole mysterious idea of Stanley Kubrick and how smart was he really? Do you know what I mean? What exactly was he? And he's intentionally trying to, you know, throw you off the scent. The same with Philip K. Dick. K. Dick said flat out, don't trust an author, because he was intentionally making people think about his stuff extra.
Yeah, yeah. I think Kubrick meant all the stuff in his films. I think he was that OCD. Yeah.
I would, yeah, yeah, I would, I mean, you never can tell. Like, that's a believable, from the, like, you've heard about Kubrick's library and stuff like that, right? Where it's just, like, intense and insane.
Yeah, yeah, I watched the John Ronson thing where he goes and looks at his, all these suitcases and things. Have you seen that?
Mm-mm.
I think it's on Vimeo. Yeah, the...
We'll put it in the show notes. I'll find it and check it out, and then we'll put it in the show notes.
Yeah, that's the guy that John Ronson. He was the guy that went to Bohemian Grove with Alex Jones.
Ah.
So getting back to the nightmare.
Oh, there's the blue people. See, there's other like. That, well, like I said, it had stepped into an intentional sink, but the movie starts sinking in on itself, which is another question that I asked Rodney, because the individuals in the movies who are expressing like all of the stuff happening all account to it being confirmed while watching a movie. So they're like all of them. Even Rodney himself tells a story where it's like, this happened to me, and then I was sitting here watching this movie, and I'm like, that's exactly what happened to me. That's Sync. That's straight up Sync. Like, the movies are syncing. So the movie starts syncing with itself in this weird way. There's even more details to the fact where one guy sees these gray-like aliens. Am I ruining this?
No, it just makes me want to see it even more, mate.
So there's aliens, but they look, he says they look like they have TV static all over them.
Oh, interesting.
And then there's one episode where the guy's sitting there and he's like, I don't know if he's dreaming. I can't remember exactly, or if this really happened. He said that he was with this really weird chick, and the weird chick covered her eyes and is like, oh, the blue thing is coming. And he says this really blurry blue being comes out and starts talking to him. And then she's like, you know, don't worry about what's behind you. And he turns around and it's the gray aliens with the TV static. So there's this like pull on, you know, the true conception of what the other intelligence is. I won't even say alien. I'll say other. The other intelligence is being this blue being. And then the demons behind him are the TV aliens or the static aliens or like the representation of what media personifies alien or other as. So there's two different aspects, the true aspect and then the aspect that we conceive of in our head based on media. It's really imaginatory.
That's quite sinky, because the first time I ever had sleep paralysis was when I was in the States, and I was staying at a friend's house, and in the basement of their house, and I couldn't move my body, but my mind was extra alert, and I had this presence sort of at the bottom of the bed. So the next day, I told my friend and her mum, and they were saying that was where the estate that they lived on, that was Indian burial ground. so that like syncs with the poltergeist,
right? And, channel 42, because it's messed up. I'm telling you, if you've experienced sync paralysis, watch Rodney's film, and it will sync with you. It's like, it's a film that has like, because he intentionally was trying to mess with people, and maybe he didn't even have in mind the way that it will affect people. I think that's the trick for Kubrick as well. Like, and I think that Jake Kotsis said this to me one time, like, if you try to sync with people, it's going to continue to sync in ways that you were not conscious of. Like, the more you intentionally try to layer meaning, the more meaning it's going to have that you're not even going to be aware of. So maybe say that when Kubrick made his movie, five out of the things were direct hits that he was, you know, intentionally putting in there. The rest, however, would be things that just kind of manifested themselves. Do you get what I mean?
Yeah, so there's like a sync hidden hand so there's like a jigsaw, and say Kubrick's putting these jigsaw, and then the sort of final piece, Kubrick couldn't find that piece, and sync filled that hole.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. Oh, Jesus. Man, we've gone over 42, homie.
Well, that was a great chat.
That was. In fact, I mean, it's hard to stop.
I just bought a couple of Philip K. Dick books. I got Ubik, and then I got a collection of his short stories. I think it's number 5, and that's where I posted a picture on Instagram yesterday of the shortest story of PKD.
Oh yeah.
That's not a story. That's not like a
But
story.
don't
That's just
notice
like.
how that story, if is that really a PKD? Was that a short story in one of his books written by him?
Yeah,
Did you
that's him.
notice how much it has to do with like his, it's Divine Invasion kind of over, where it's like the, or Valis, where the savior is killed. It's the same thing. I mean, it's like, it's just like in the way that actors have the same things get covered over in their thing, you know, like Stephen King stories always have to do with the writer. There's certain themes that he's hashed over like four times.
The first story in this is called The Little Black Box, and it's about there's a TV personality who is like not overtly religious, but he there's this little black box that everybody's got called the empathy box. So when they touch this, they feel what this guy feels on the TV, and they realize that he is just manifest on here, but he's actually an extraterrestrial from.
Great. See the alien, the idea of alien being put forth through the media is not, is like, oh God, that's huge for me right now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know whether when that one was written, but he definitely appears to be trying to work out this thing that's happened to him over and over.
Even before it happened to him.
Which is really weird.
Right. So you never know if it was like something he did to himself or if everything that happened to him earlier in his life was leading up to that and was some kind of, you know, the causality might have been in the experience itself.
Well, he in Radio Free Alworth, he sort of mentions that, like the Phil character, which is his mate in the book, because he's Nick, isn't he? And his mate is Phil. His mate is him. But he sort of mentions a book that he's written where the main character lives. He's got some sort of precondition where he sees things, visions of a year into the future. He has to live those out. So predestined, like you know, it's almost fated. So he has to fulfill it. Have you seen Predestination yet?
No, it sounds familiar though. I don't know if I like researched it. Predestination.
It's got Ethan Hawke and Noah Taylor, who lives here in Brighton.
Oh shit, it's a hat man.
And Noah Taylor seems to always play that character in, like, you know, Vanilla Sky, in Tomb Raider, even.
Didn't you say you ran into him not too long ago?
He was in the post office. And he was in front of me, and I was thinking, oh, he looks a bit like my mate Pat. And then sort of he turned more from sideways to full. I was like, no way, that's the guy that's been in that film that I was just watching before.
Oh, that's crazy.
There's quite a lot of famous people that you see in town here. Because it's a very small place, Brighton, and with a high proportion of familiar faces.
So, okay, I gotta wrap this up, man, because I gotta go mow my grass. But I gotta ask what you got going on in the future.
We're slugging away on the new type1radio.com site with booking some guests. I haven't got anybody in particular at the moment, but we really want to get you and Doug on for a show when we can all be available.
We're going to work this out this year, man.
Yeah, definitely. I'm still making various tunes on the quite a lot on my iPad, which is interesting because the quality of the tunes on there that you can make on such a small device is excellent. And taking a lot of photographs and manipulating them into interesting artworks on Instagram, Sonic23. Just living life, being happy. I think that's what I'm doing.
Man, we got to talk again, dude. I didn't think that you know that we had so much to talk about, but it feels like I don't want to stop. So we're just gonna have to schedule for another time.
Okay, excellent.
Thank you, sir. It's been a pleasure. And as far as like getting this out and stuff, it won't be as quick as like the other shows because I'll pretty it up a little bit. So why don't you send me a link to your music too? Because I'll probably add some of that in there.
Okay.
Do you make, what kind of, is it mostly electronica? I don't even think I've listened to your stuff. I know that I've heard your like smoke breaks before, but.
Well, you must have listened to one of them because one of them was the theme tune of one of the 42 minutes.
Oh, that's right. But do you make like hip hop stuff? Or is it mostly kind of like the electronica?
It's mostly, chilled beats. I do some dubstep and occasional techno, but not like hard techno, quite minimalist. I quite like a label called Hot Flush. Definitely check them out because all the stuff on there. There's a guy called Scuba, and he makes some wicked tunes. So,
yeah, send me some links either on Skype or on Facebook, and then I got to get outside, or else I'm like we had the whole last week it has rained, so my fucking backyard is like a jungle.
Well, we've had about a week of nice dry weather, and I've been at work, and my first day off. It's pissed it down all day. So, yeah, that was it made a good opportunity for me to be able to watch Radio Free Albums, though, because I've been wanting to watch it for ages.
Right.
And I've always just put it on the back burner, but, you know, I didn't have anything else to do today.
We have it on Netflix here also, but it's I can never like sit there. I can't watch it with my kids. I can't watch it with my wife. So it's always like a question of when I get the TV to myself. So I really want to see it though, just because it's like one of my favorite books.
Yeah, I've got the book on my iPad, but I think I want to buy the book because I have a real hard time reading books on a screen.
I see.
It goes in so much better from paper.
I think you're right. I think that there's something about carrying a book around too. You kind of make you have an attachment to the book.
It's
a bond.
Well, you're a definite bond. It's nice. It's an earthy thing. Right, I'll let you go and get your warm mode. Okay, take care, Will.
Man, it's been a pleasure, dude. I'll talk to you soon, okay?
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. That was 42 minutes. Thank you, Sonic, for sharing it with me. This has been episode 2 of the Renegade series, and you've been listening to Sonic on SyncBook Radio, a production of thesyncbook.com. Information about the work of Sonic can be found at the website we mentioned earlier, type1radio.com. type1radio.com for more information about the SyncBook, our guest, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes. Please be sure and visit our website at 42minutes.com. If you like this podcast and would like more, consider becoming a member. Some of the membership benefits include full access to the complete audio archives, discounts on books, behind-the-scenes scripts, bonus audio and video, as well as monthly online hangout with the host. And this and more can be found at thesyncbook.com/membership. Thanks so much. And remember, renegades are the people with their own philosophies. They change the course of history. Everyday people like you and me, we're the renegades. We're the people with our own philosophies. We change the course of history. Everyday people like you.